Good evening, everyone. Here in just a little while, we'll be singing number 943. And get this started here. So I just want to take a quick second to thank everybody for coming out this evening with us, this Friday evening, to be a part of our gospel meeting. And the whole theme of our gospel meeting is social righteousness and the breakdown of the family and the impact on society. That's how it's listed. So each night we've been taking a theme along with this to talk about this. And tonight we're going to be talking about man's idea of the family, but we're going to kind of slowly break into it. We're going to talk about, just real quick, about what they've been talking about each night, and then we'll talk about what we're going to get into this evening. But yet again, I just wanted to thank everybody for coming out and give everybody this opportunity to speak. I actually love public speaking. It's one of the things that I love to do. A lot of people are afraid of public speaking. It's a rare thing that an IT person loves to speak in front of people, but that's why I enjoy it so much. But, you know, I was thinking, too, of the qualifications maybe to preach a topic of the family. I kind of wanted to just use that as a clause here because I've only been married for 4 years and we're just about ready to have a kid. So I don't want to stand up here and be like, you know, this is how you should parent and this is how you should do that, because I'm not one. And I don't know what it's like to be one yet. So that's just what I would like to say, because I'm not going to get into any of that. But we're just going to kind of think of a few things this evening to try to get everybody thinking about this topic. So, Abe started us off on Wednesday evening on the conditions of the family and the road ahead. I asked Abe if he would send me over all of his percentages and all of his numbers so I could show a chart of what it would look like. I worked on it, and I thought it was just better to show this chart. This is really what the numbers showed. I really couldn't come up with any better idea. I was going to put all the numbers in. I was just like, I can do this in paint real quick. And this is kind of the idea of where the family's heading. Also, Cody talked about God's plan for the family. And the whole time that Cody was speaking, I was like, you know, it's like the perfect roadmap. Because Cody broke down every verse that talks about the family and husbands and wives and children and what they should do. We're going to touch a little bit more on those this evening. But, you know, I was just thinking, hey, you know, the Bible's our roadmap. So that's kind of what I was thinking when I was putting this lesson together. So that's what they've talked about these first two evenings. So now we're going to talk about man's idea for the family. And I have thought about this a lot. So hopefully this evening I'm going to talk about something different of maybe what you've already perceived that you thought this lesson was going to be about. So, let's get into this. So, man's idea of the family, these are actually direct quotes of what I got off the internet, of what people perceive. I'll read these off, because I didn't realize text was so small. So, and there's some spelling and grammar mistakes. I took these directly off the internet, so I apologize. It says, "For me, an ideal family is comprised of a mother, a father, and kids living together, understand each other, helping one another, love and respect another, and most of all, God-fearing." It's interesting. I got that off of the internet, just off of Yahoo Questions. It was a religious site. Also, to go along with that, it says, small family, good education, understanding, sharing, counseling, caring, calm, and peace, simple life, good character, etc., and ideal features of the family. Also, two loving parents, married only once, raising their biological children in loving, healthy, and happy home. Yet again, these are direct quotes from people on the internet, not, you know, a Church of Christ site or any site like that. And also, I thought this one was interesting. This last one says, where a mother-in-law and daughter-in-law live as mother and daughter, this family always is an ideal family. I thought that was interesting. But those are quotes of what people are saying. When I read through those quotes, you can't help but not think of, like, the Leaver to Beaver family. You know, it was the ideal family of the 1950s. And, you know, and I think that's everybody's perception of a family. You know, if you ask anybody, like, hey, what the ideal family is, it's kind of like the white picket fence and, you know, the husband and wife and kids and everything's like in this perfect harmony. You know, that's kind of this interesting realm. One of my favorite artists is Norman Rockwell. And, you know, he has great paintings where he can really make you kind of feel what's going on in his paintings. Well, one of them is his freedom of want. When I think of a family, this is what I normally think of, that Thanksgiving dinner, you know, where everybody's really happy and they're setting this turkey down and just everybody's coming together, this idea of Thanksgiving. But, you know, I searched on Google real quick because I was like, you know, Thanksgiving is a time for family. What better things to talk about man's view of a family than during Thanksgiving? Well, you know, if you Google Thanksgiving, this is what you get. Thanksgiving stresses, coping with Thanksgiving, a stress-free Thanksgiving, 12 best strategies for a lower stress Thanksgiving, 5 ways to keep your family from ruining Thanksgiving. That's what you get when you Google Thanksgiving and family. You know, this should be a time where everybody gets to come together, love one another, respect one another, but it doesn't seem to be the way that everything is viewed. So, the man's idea of the family is what we're going to be covering tonight. So we're going to be talking about marriage, husband, wife, children, the roles in the church, and then we're going to kind of have a conclusion, and we're going to leave it there for Roger's going to be picking up tomorrow night. So these are kind of the topics that we're going to be talking about. So first off, with marriage, I have some statistics we're going to look at, and I have the website quoted to where we're going to pull these from, but I'd like to look at this in a specific way. This evening you might be thinking about of all of the negative things that go along with how man views a family, but I kind of would like to take a look at this real quick. So a Clark University poll of emerging adults found that 86% of people singled and married ages 18 to 29 expect their marriages to last a lifetime. Well, that's interesting, right? 90% of emerging adults say that they're expected to find their soulmate as a married partner. The divorce rate is 50%. It means that a lot of them are going to have unexpected divorce. A lot of them are going to have their dream not pan out. And that's kind of the thought that I would like to take this evening, is man's idea of family has always been kind of hardwired into us what God's wanted it to be. You know, when these people were polled, they were like, yes, that's what a family should be, even though that's not what happens. So what happens is sin enters in, and those things don't happen. You know, if you were to ask people what they think, this is what comes out. But it always seems that, you know, sin enters in, and then there's a divorce, and there's a multiple things that happen. So, Cody discussed a lot last night of married is one flesh. And I have both of the verses that we used last evening to talk about one flesh. And it is interesting when we look at this idea of one flesh that we have this coming together of one person. And divorce is dividing that one flesh apart. So, I mean, that sounds bad, you know, to pull those two pieces apart. So when I was researching this, I looked through the top 10 reasons why divorce happens. These more of our the psychological views of why divorce happens. So the first one is the lack of communication. The lack of communication is interesting when we look at marriage itself as one flesh. You would think that one flesh would communicate very well with each other. However, that's not what pans out. You know, that's what, you know, it said 90% of people, you know, wanted to be married for a lifetime, and that doesn't work out. Well, these things enter in, this lack of communication. Finances, that is huge. That is huge. You know, normally when I talk to people about divorce, this is the number one thing that they seem to always turn it around on. I have kind of a story about that. So I was married just about 4 years ago, and at the time I was working for a data center in Dayton, and I used to run a call where I would have people all over the world was on this call. And just during our downtimes, I would just talk about things, and I was talking about getting married. Well, one of the guys from New York mailed me a card, and it had a quarter on the inside of it. And when I opened it up, and he said, before you get married, flip this coin. It was like heads, you get married and you get a lawyer, and like tails, you run as fast as you can. I was like, wow, thanks for the card. You know, I really appreciate you thinking of me. But I was thinking, wow, that was his view of marriage. And I called him and I asked him why. And he was like, well, I've been married for 16 years and she took all my money. Oh, okay. Wow. All right. That's why he sent me that card. It's interesting because I used to get a lot of inputs and views from a lot of my friends because, like I said, I was just married just a few years ago. And I was talking to everybody once about getting married, and a lot of them came up to me and they said, I don't know why you would ever want to get married. You guys can just live together, all of this. And I had a friend stand up and he said, no. He's like, I know how Kyle is. He needs to get married. He's like, I've been married for like 58 years. And, you know, he's like, that's the best thing that could happen. I was just like, wow, I really appreciated him for doing that. But yet again, these top reasons for divorce are feeling constrained. Yet again, kind of odd for one flesh to feel constrained. Trust, expectations from each other. Your spouse doesn't understand or fulfill your needs or desires. Quick changes in life. I was thinking of this the other day. Normally when people go through a midlife crisis, they like buy a motorcycle. I'm getting ready to sell my motorcycle to buy a minivan. You know, that's kind of, I'm doing the opposite right now. So insecurity, religious and cultural differences, and abuse. These are the top 10 reasons why divorce happens. And this is just a poll that was taken that I pulled off of some websites and kind of made these top 10 reasons. But we all know that this shouldn't happen. This is what seeps in. This is what takes that, you know, 90% of people that think this is going to last a lifetime down to that 50%. This is what comes in. So if we take a look at the husband, most of this is what was discussed last night. But if we take a look at this, I have always thought that everything that God gives for us to do kind of goes against what we want to do. You know, I think of the verse like, turn the other cheek. You know, if somebody hits you, turn the other cheek. I mean, I would be swinging, but that's not what I should do, right? So it's kind of the way that a lot of things are laid out. We should follow what God wants us to do, even though us as humans, this is not what we want to do. You know, sometimes it's very hard for us to do things. So with that, as I discussed last night, most of these verses were read, and I'll kind of leave these up here if anybody's writing some of these down. I was going to turn to all these tonight, but just for time's sake, most of these are discussed about the husband being the leader. However, we will turn over to Ephesians, because a lot of what we discuss will be from that section. And let's see. Ephesians 5 covers a lot of what we'll discuss, even the husband and the wife. But that section talks a lot about the husband being a leader, just as Christ is over the church. So when we look at that, how that is very important that Christ was over the church and that man should be over the household and the wife. So that's quite a very large role to play. That's a very strong role to play. And a lot of people simply don't want to do something like that. That kind of goes against a lot of people's thoughts and how we want to act. It's like, no, I don't want to do this. You know, I got married so she can handle all these things. I had a friend once that said, why is, when you get married, why is the bride's wife white? I said, I don't know. And he's like, so it can match the dishwasher. I was like, ouch. Wow. Okay. But, you know, that was his view of marriage. So he wasn't being the leader of the household. So also, love your wife unconditionally. That's also in Ephesians 5 and 25. And that says, husbands, love your wife just as Christ loved the church, that the church gave himself for her. Of course, we know that Christ died for the church. You know, so that's how a husband should be with his wife. Also, serve his wife. You know, I had gave a lesson a few months ago on servant leadership and about how in business it seems to be the top thing that everybody's talking about. But yet, I talked about how the Bible's been talking about that, you know, for the last 4,000 years. And about servant leadership and about how that's how Christ was a servant leader. You know, and I think of these verses when it talks about how we should serve our wives as husbands. And it's that same way. It's that servant leadership. Also, on the wife's side, it's to be a helper to the husband. We talked about that last night in Genesis 2:18. We talked about respecting the husband. That's also in Ephesians 5 and 5:33. And it says, "Nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband." So there's respect. So then love your husband. That goes along with that same verse that we just read there in Titus, Colossians, Ephesians, and 1 Peter, where all of these verses lay the groundwork of how we are to be as a family, even though this may go against what man's view of a family is. This is how it's laid out. When we talk about all of these topics about respect and love, don't they all kind of counteract these 10 reasons why divorce happens? So each of these reasons completely counteract, you know, exactly what's laid out in those verses. So, let's talk about children here for a second. Yet again, like I said, I don't have children, and one of the things, like I said, that I don't want to do is talk about how to discipline or raise children or anything, because I haven't yet, and I always think of those people that are always like, oh, you know, my kid's not going to do that, and then when they have kids, those are the kids that are doing that, and, you know, I never want anything to come back on me, so... So we'll talk about children here. So that's in Colossians 3:20. It says, "Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord." Also in Proverbs 1:8, it says, "My son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother." You know, I was going to throw up some statistics today about how children are. And I work for the adult ed part of the career center. And sometimes when I walk into the high school part of the career center, it blows me away of how, you know, the students act there. I'm good friends with the police officer that's stationed there, and every day he has a story for me that I just can't believe. And they're actually making the in-school suspension room like twice the size because there are so many students that get sent to in-school suspension. It's pretty crazy. And I was thinking of that when I was thinking about these, you know, children obeying your parents. You know, these basically rules and laws and sets, you know, that we give to our children to follow. And also here in Ephesians 6, it says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and you may live long on the earth." You know, I've thought of that quite a bit, to live long on the earth. You know, if you think about it, taking advice from your parents, it will let you live longer on the earth. You know, I think of that sometimes. Like I said, I ride a motorcycle, and maybe I should have listened to them better if I shouldn't have bought that motorcycle. You know, I've had some close calls, you know. But there's a lot of things that we can do that can help us live longer on the earth by taking advice from our parents. Also with that, "And your fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in training and admiration of the Lord." And that's kind of the next part that I kind of want to talk about this evening. And me and Jenna kind of put together this cycle of like a dysfunctional family. And I know that we've seen a lot of cycles of how things work before, but we kind of came up with this just based on you know, Jenna working in education and me working in education. We kind of just see how these things react. You can kind of see how poor parenting leads to that affects the child, that there's lack of Bible teaching. You know, then that goes to where sin enters in. Then that child has children of their own. And then it goes right back into poor parenting affects child. It's this vicious cycle that keeps happening over and over again. There are the people that break away from it. Jenna has an adopted brother that had a very rough life growing up in the beginning, and he can prove it by the cigarette scars on his back that they put out on him. I mean, That's pretty serious, you know. I think of things like that and think, wow, I mean, I went through nothing at all like that, you know, as a child. To think about how, but, you know, he can come out of that and succeed in life, you know, but he's got to break that cycle. And, of course, you know, his family definitely helped with that. But we kind of see how this cycle works. So if we compare this cycle to the cycle of godly families, you know, that's where a peace needs to break off, where you have marriage, where you love and respect one another. You have children, teach children about God, grow in love and admiration, and then they have children, and it kind of just keeps going. And doesn't it almost seem like this is easier? I know that might sound crazy, but sometimes it seems like, hey, you know, this, it can make things easier. You know, I'm not saying that being a Christian is easy all the time. Just saying that this just seems like things will work out better and roll quicker. So, family, and I pulled this out just to talk about the qualities of a family and a sound church. Because I was thinking that we have to have these qualities of a family to have a sound church. And just kind of like to read this from Titus 2, starting in verse 2. And it says, "But as for you, speak one thing which are proper for sound doctrine, that the older men be sober, reverent, temperate, sound in faith, in love, patience. The older women likewise, that they may be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers for good things, that they admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be decent, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed." I thought this was interesting. When we're looking at how a sound church works together, it works a lot like a family. The song that we sung right before we started the lesson this evening was God's Family. And isn't it interesting that part of the qualities is, you know, to make sure that you bring up the children, to love children, to bring them up and to be decent. Also, to continue with that verse in Titus 2 and 6, and it says, "Likewise, exhort the young men to be sober-minded in all things, showing yourself to be a pattern of good works and the doctrine, showing integrity, reverence, incorruptibility, the sound speech that cannot be condemned, that one who is an opponent may be ashamed, having nothing evil to say of you." You know, and I think of those things about how that's how God wants us to build our church. And it involves those families. So, building off of that, we talk about the elders, bishops here in 1 Timothy 3, where we'll talk about elders, bishops, and deacons, where it talks about building the church. But to be one of these roles, you have to fulfill basically this lifestyle. So here in 1 Timothy 3, it says, "This is a faithful saying. If a man desires the position of a bishop, he desires good work. A bishop then must be blameless, a husband of one wife." So will we go back to how families should be? "Temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, able to teach, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not covetousness. One who rules his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence. For if a man does not know how to rule his own house, how will he take care of the church of God?" And I think of that today. You know, in the world today, do we see a lot of people that run their households well? You know, or are people doing what they need to do, you know, to run their houses? Because basically this thing is, you have to fulfill that role to have this. And also, yet again, it says that, you know, having children in submission. That's why I said I'm not quite there yet. I've got a little ways to go. But that's why, you know, we should be striving for these positions. Also, a deacon, likewise, deacons must be reverent, not double-tongued, not given to much wine, not greedy for money, holding the mystery of the faith with a pure conscience. But let these also first be tested. Then let them serve as deacons, being found blameless. Likewise, their wives must be reverent, not slanderers, temperate, faithful in all things. Let deacons be the husband of one wife, ruling their children and their own houses." Well, you know, even these roles that we're given, it builds off of how we should be as fathers, wives, and children. You know, they all have to fit in here, into this section for the church. I think it's interesting that God builds this foundation of a family, and it plays such a large part in everything that He has us do, especially with the church and how we should build it up and maintain it and run it. It all comes down to that. So, there's one thing that I would like to end on this evening. And here in a moment, we'll be singing the song that was selected. I'd like to just talk about this idea of together. When I was researching, trying to get ideas for this lesson, I kind of just stumbled upon this entry. Because I like to read through forum posts of like when people post ideas about marriage. Because I was thinking, you know, if I'm taking this from the aspect of man's view of the family, I kind of need to jump out there and see actually what man's view of the family is. Because I have my view, but yet again, I've attended services here for almost the last 30 years. So my view of the family is going to be different of what everybody else's view of the family is. Well, when I was out reading through these things, I came up across this post. This person just asked, what is the meaning of a family that prays or stays together? I mean, you could tell that they were totally lost, that they had never heard this before. And this was a response that was given to this. A family that prays together, stays together, is an example of the importance of practicing religion in a family. Families that share their beliefs, prayers, and feelings tend to be less dysfunctional. I was like, wow, that's interesting. You know, when I think of a family, these are the things that I think about. You know, this togetherness, this staying together. I know that this may not go along with man's idea of a family, but yet, when I think of family, this is what it's about. It's about being together. Of course, I think this person's trying to pass blame, you know, so if there is dysfunction, he's not saying, hey, this is going to end all of your dysfunctions. But this is what togetherness is. And when I think of family, I think of togetherness. And with that said, the lesson is yours this evening. So Roger will be bringing all this together. I may have just threw him a curveball, so he might have to go back home and rewrite his lesson for tomorrow night. We'll see. But if anybody has any prayers or any needs of the church or would like to become a Christian and start that path of that family, please come forward as we stand and sing the song that's been selected.